Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour with Josh Tully of The Josh Tully Show, author, entrepreneur, speaker, and so much more. His own radio show, heard live weekdays, Monday through Friday, 10 to 12, 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Genesis, right before Alex Jones. You can find all that information out. Go to joshtully.com. That's joshtully.com. His latest book on Evangelpreneur is fantastic, and it is a one-of-a-kind book. I tell you, I started reading it before he came on, not this time, the appearance before, and I finished after about a week after that show. And I want to go back and read it again, but there's so much in there to teach people how to or help people understand how to live, and not only just live, and when I say live, I mean exist, but to live and do it in a godly way, following sound biblical principles in all areas of life, from business to family, and to how you use those resources, not only to help yourself and your businesses, but to help those around you.
Exactly.
And solution-based is always the best. I mean, we have, you know, we talk about the problems of this world, of you know, from the economy to the politics to so much. I mean, there's problems everywhere, and too little do we hear about solutions.
You know, before we get back to Josh, I want to mention tomorrow night we're going to be joined by Coach Dave Dobenmeyer and author Greg Jackson. What a dynamic duo. So set your watches, synchronize them right now. Go ahead. We'll wait. Synchronize your watches for tomorrow night. Greg Jackson, author extraordinaire, Coach Dave Dobenmeyer, America's coach, to be sure. Can't wait for that. But tonight, our guest again, as Joe said, Josh Tully, magnificent man. I mean, he's a man's man, truly. And wow. So, Josh, thanks for giving, sacrificing your time tonight and doing multiple hours of radio today. So, thank you so much for being with us.
You know what, guys? I just want to say thank you for doing this. I started coaching businesses now 15 years ago. And the last two seminars I've done, I do a two-day boot camp, and people can find out more. And notice how I don't really plug myself. This is the first time in the entire show. But people can find these boot camps on joshtully.com. Here's why I'm saying it. Because the last two I've done, I've had people come from your show. They said, Josh, I've heard you on the Hagmans. They've come to the seminars. Their lives have been changed. Their marriages have been renewed and refreshed. And it's just amazing the results that are happening in these Hagman and Hagman listeners' lives because they've listened to the Hagman Report. And because of that, and because I knew I was coming on again, what we're going to do is we're going to do a couples special. I absolutely think it is so important that couples do this together. So if you're a listener and you want to come to one of these events, go to joshtully.com, select the date and the location that you want to come, and at checkout, if you enter the discount code Hagman, we're going to give your spouse 50% off. Just because of what has come through doing these interviews with you guys. You guys are changing lives by proxy through this, and I just want to give you a huge thank you for caring about your listeners so much. There are lots of shows, folks, that talk about the problems, and I get it. It's kind of fun, and we need to know. But when the Hagmans do a show like this, where we get to talk about solutions, please don't waste that opportunity. So I just want to say thank you for that.
Well, and thank you for that ability to, for your gracious offer in terms of your boot camp offer, the coupon offer. And tell us again, so I can write it down this time, folks. your boot camp.
So the boot camp is called The Business of Life because my theory is we get the most out of business in order to put the most into our lives. So it's called The Business of Life. We have a number of them up on joshtully.com. All you have to do is go to the website, hit the events tab, and you're going to see a number of different options. We have Florida in April 16th and 17th, Tampa. Sparta, Wisconsin, 30th and 31st, so they can select their event and just enter, again, the discount code Hagman. And what's really interesting about this event is it's not just rah-rah. I'm kind of like the anti-motivational speaker. I was so sick and tired of going to events and buying books that did nothing but make me excited for 2 days, and then 2 days later, I'm back in the same situation. So in this class, you will get the same information that I have used to help businesses completely transform. Some of these businesses are now multi-million dollar businesses. Yeah, I'm going to give you all of it. The sales, the marketing, deciding what products, deciding what industry, who do you work with, where do you put the business, what about regulation? You know, am I cut out to do it? Well, Josh, I don't want to be an entrepreneur. Can I still be involved? The answer is yes. So we run through all of these issues. So by the time you leave, you are equipped to then go forth and change the world. And what's interesting about that is I was reading one of the comments during the YouTube break, and I forgot who it was, but it was kind of along that same idea about how we are to serve God, and we're supposed to go out and make disciples. Notice how Jesus said, go out into the world and make disciples. He didn't provide the disciples on location. He didn't say, well, just stay where you're at, because I'm going to bring the four corners of the world to you guys. You guys just chill in one spot. Again, it's another example, just like the sparrow we were talking about. Yes, it is only God that moves them to say that Jesus is the Son of God. That's exactly what God said. But you have to go plant that seed. You have to go find that berry. And this is the exact same thing, which is why I love talking about solutions to Christian groups, because admittedly, we are kind of hard to change because of the religious, almost like handcuffs that we wear. But once we change, once we embrace what the Bible says, man, the power that comes out of these Christian homes, once they understand what evangelpreneurship is and how to implement it, it's unreal.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the how we hinder ourselves and how we can get out of whether it's personal bad habits from exercising or not exercising and eating wrong to, like what you talked about how if a family doesn't spend enough time together, you know, so often we get caught up in routines and in cycles and habits, and find ourselves, you know, unable to break away from them to get what we need done or to reprioritize our lives so that we're living, you know, to the best of our ability. What is it that, you know, keeps people stuck in situations they know are not good for them, yet they can't seem to bring themselves to change? What is the number one cause that you've seen, Josh, that motivates people to take that first step? I mean, does it have to be, you know, people hitting a rock bottom or having some kind of life change? Or can it be done just by wanting it enough?
Well, it can be done by two ways. One is hitting rock bottom. There's actually a physical process that happens when somebody hits rock bottom. I explain that. Actually, it's weird. I explain how and why that works in that seminar. But the reality is that when somebody hits rock bottom, there's a shift that actually happens in their mind. It takes about a millionth of a volt. It's not some sort of weird, goofy thing. It's a real thing. And what you notice is those people that have that hit rock bottom experience never go back. Like, these are the people who, you know, they were on heroin for 12 years, hit rock bottom, and now 20 years later, they've never even been tempted. And they're like, yeah, I just gave it up. Well, it's because something physically happens in your brain to make that work. And now there's ways we can do that on purpose, but that's one way. The other thing that happens, and the other reason why we have a hard time changing our behavior, is because we don't have anything to live for. And I know that sounds really weird, but one of the first things I do, and I'm glad you brought this up, Joe, one of the first things I do with the class is I have them make up their meaning of life list. So real simply, the first step to this is you're going to want to take out a piece of paper. and list everything that's in your life, all of it. Your wife, your kids, your softball league, your job, your NRA membership. Just list everything. Because our life is really the accumulation of what it is we do and spend time on. So list everything on that list. Once you have that list, now rearrange it in order of priority. So God first, then your spouse, then your kids, and so on and so forth. Now, this is where it gets really tricky and hard. And I know it sounds simple, but trust me, I've been doing this for a while with thousands of people, and it's harder than you think. Somewhere on that list, take a red pen and draw a line. That line is going to represent something very important. Everything above that line is what you would die for. Like, actually, physically, literally, die for. I would assume you would die for your spouse and your children and all that sort of stuff.
I would hope so.
So, put a line on this list. Now, here comes the sad part. You will notice that most of our time and money is actually spent below the line.
Wow.
This is why people have the tendency to go to bed thinking, is this all my life is? And then wake up thinking, man, doesn't it get better than this? Because we are spending most of our time and our money below the line. Which is why, you know, we don't really spend time in prayer with God, we don't read His Word, we don't spend enough time with our children, we don't spend enough time with our spouse. And it's true. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. Most of us spend most of our time and money below that line. Well, here's the significance of that. If you have nothing to die for, you have nothing to live for. And if you have nothing to live for, bad habits become pacifist habits. All of a sudden, you eat because it tastes good. You smoke because it feels good. Because there's really nothing else that is providing that positivity in your life. You're not chasing anything. For goodness sakes, we just covered in the past hour how terrible everything is. So when you don't have that priority list in sight with that line drawn on it, of course we're going to fill it with bad habits. We're also going to fill it with complacency and normalcy bias and all these other sort of things that alternative media tries to blame but never tends to figure out. Well, here's the process of figuring it out. So once you have that list made, you start saying to yourself, okay, what is it going to take in order for me to make that a reality? Now, that's where it becomes a little tricky. And that's where change is required, and the things that require us from or prevent us from changing are actually fear and pride. So many people are actually afraid to succeed. And I know that sounds weird. Like, why would people be afraid to succeed? But if you actually look up, just Google self-sabotage, you will find that it is a massively large phenomenon. Because as much as we hate being where we're at, we're scared of actually moving. So we have a tendency to excuse away or self-sabotage any sort of action that moves forward, all based out of fear. So we need to talk about fear a little bit. Fear is nothing to be afraid of, yet it's everything that fear is made of. Wow, that was pretty cool. I've never said that before. Somebody should write that down. But here's the reality, okay? Let's say I'm on a mountain, and I'm afraid of snow. And there's a weather report that says, oh my goodness, there is 3 feet of snow coming. Well, I am going to get on my satellite phone, and I'm going to call a helicopter, and I'm going to pay $800 to get them to get me off of this mountain because of my fear. Well, now let's say I'm a skier, and I'm on the bottom of the mountain in the village, and I hear 3 feet of snow is coming. I am going to pay $800 to have that helicopter take me up the mountain, because I want to go be afraid. And this is where we've kind of messed up as American society. What one person is afraid of, so they run, another person is afraid of, so they run towards. And the difference is identifying what it is you're afraid of. So I would ask listeners, say, okay, let's just take a break. Sit back and say, what am I actually afraid of? Because if we can't identify it, then we can't overcome it. We just feel afraid and we're not really sure why. Matter of fact, this is a common phenomenon with a lot of Christians today. They're moving out of the country because they're afraid and really not sure why. They're building bunkers because they're afraid, but not really sure of what. And I'm not saying those things are bad and you should prep, and I teach a class on that too. But when you can't identify it, even your prepping is going to be unsuccessful because you're not prepping for something specific. You need to identify the very thing you're afraid of. The other thing that prevents us from changing is pride. Pride is this almost delusion of grandeur. It's saying that if I try and fail, then somehow I'm worse than if I've never tried. And that's just pride. That's ego. The reality is that I hope you fail. Yeah, I hope you fail. Because failure is where we actually learn how to succeed. If you never crashed while you're skiing, you're never going to be a good swimmer. If you never fell when you were walking, you would never learn how to walk. It's actually the failures that we learn to correct that keep us up, if you think about it. When you have a little toddler, it's not his success that gets him to change and become a walker. It's his failures and then learning how to avoid them in the future. And for some reason, as adults, we've been so inundated with, well, if you fail at something, then that's somehow embarrassing. Folks, I gotta tell you, the most embarrassing thing is to never try. That's absolutely embarrassing. If you come in front of me and say, well, Josh, I've never tried anything in my entire life. I never took the risk. There were a lot of things I thought about doing, but I never did it. Are you proud of me? No, I would say I'm sad for you. I pity you. Because there's nothing that God could have blessed. I tell people this, guys. I say, look, if you don't have a dream that is so big that it would take an act of God to accomplish, then don't expect him to show up. We have these dreams like, well, I just want to make it to Friday. Well, do you need that much divine intervention to make it till Friday? All you have to do is not die. So, we really have to get back to, what are we trying to live for?
And that's such great insight, you know. And you'd think us humans would, especially in the advanced society we live in today, we would have the common sense to think of things like this more often. And you know, you raised a great point, asking yourself, what do I have to live for? You know, what people wake up, you know, we have the highest rate of medicated people per capita, and we have the highest incarceration rate. It just seems like people are hopeless. Even, you know, people who work every day, same jobs, sometimes they, you know, you find people who love what they do. Most people hate what they do, but they do it because they feel that they have to, that there is no choice. We put ourselves in this little box almost, you know, we restrain ourselves like how people put God in a box, you know, and it's sad, but we can only go as far as we allow ourselves mentally. If we have a attitude that we're only as good as, $7.50 an hour, and you know, that's all we're going to ever make because we have no formal education or whatever, then that's what you're going to be. But if you've never went and tried something different and did something on your own to change your circumstances, as you said, then how can you sit there and say honestly that, you know, this, you know how this is going to end because it's going to just continue the way it is? You'd be surprised what happens when you do apply a little bit of effort. I mean, you get in what you put out of it. And how much of the motivational side, Josh, when you deal with this, deals with people putting a balance, especially business owners themselves. You know, small business ownership, you see people working more so than a regular job. People say it's better to work for somebody than to work for yourself because of the time you spend working for yourself is always more. What do you tell people who come to you with that question? You know, should I work for myself or is it better to work for somebody else?
I tell them that they're doing it wrong. It is never better to work for somebody else, ever. I mean, there's no exception. Even if you work for me, and the reality is that I have a couple staffers who are listening to this show. And to be honest, I would love for all of them to, at some point, go work for themselves. Because the reality is, unless you and God sign the bottom of your paycheck, you are controlled by your boss. That is never a good place to be. Your boss, depending on how much he pays you, determines where you live, not you. Your boss, depending on how much he pays you, determines what quality education your kids get, not you. Your boss, depending on how much he pays you, determines how well you can pamper your wife, not you. And I hear this objection a lot. Well, you know, business owners, they're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, Josh. Only if they're doing it wrong. And that's the problem, because we leave our employment and we think, what can I do Monday through Friday? Well, I never run a business Monday through Friday. Who wants to put in that much work? Instead, you find businesses that actually provide an income as opposed to a service or a project that you physically do. I would say out of, I don't know, 1,000 businesses that I'll talk to, well over 900 of them, when they say, yep, I'm in business or I'm thinking about starting a business, start some sort of intense business that they plan on actually doing from like 8 till 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have to one night or something, well, that's different. But, I mean, for goodness sakes, I remember this guy. I was at a tractor pull. You know, Doug said Josh is a man's man. There you go. I'm kind of a little redneckish. I was at a tractor pull, and now it's... Tractor pulls in the middle of Nowhereville. It's not like you have a tractor pull in the middle of downtown, so there's nothing around. And this was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday event. And I'm getting thirsty, and it's Thursday morning, or Friday morning still, so most of the event hasn't even happened. And I go get a lemonade. And again, nothing around, so this guy has a business model that's just awesome. He charges me $6 for a large lemonade. And I wait in line for probably 45 minutes to get it. Now, I asked this guy, I explained who I am and what I do, and I said, now, just be honest with me. How much did it cost you for this lemonade? And he said, with the cup or without the cup? And at that point, I knew I was getting ripped off. But I said, with the cup. And he said, 35 cents. I said, wait a second. Wait. You're making over $5 of pure profit per cup? And he said, yeah. I said, how many have you sold so far? Now, keep in mind, this was Thursday and Friday morning, so the busy times haven't even happened yet. He said, oh, about 1,200. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. So in about an 8-hour shift and a 4-hour shift, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, in 12 hours, you made over $6,000? Yeah. I said, how much are you going to make this weekend? I mean, when it's all said and done. He says, well, I'll sell, you know, anywhere from 62 to 7,200 cups. I said, wait, so you will make $40,000 this weekend? He said, yeah. And I said, well, do you have another job? He goes, no, I do 5 of these a year, make 200 grand, and that's it. Spend the rest of the time with my wife and kids. Now, the rest of us are thinking, well, how do I start a business that's a plumbing business, and I'm going to get 48 clients a day, and I'm going to work from 7 in the morning till 12 at night, midnight, and I'm going to say, man, the stupidest thing I've ever done was start a business. No, the stupidest thing you've ever done was start the wrong business. And that's what people have to change. That's why I do this course, because there are 27 million small business owners, and there are very few entrepreneurs.
Very well said. And you, with the story last time when you came on was about a man in a hot dog stand.
Yes.
And I couldn't think that would be topped, but you just topped it. And I almost walked out of here and went to go buy some cups and some lemons. I mean, that is, you talk about something that, I mean, that's a dream. I mean, that would be a dream job for anybody. Barely have to work. You know, a few days a week, you're doing nothing but, you know, selling cups of lemonade, and you're living the high life. I mean, and nobody looks at that guy selling the lemonade and says, you know, that guy's got it made. Nobody. Not that that's important, but...
Well, it's very important because, like I said, we think of business as what do I do from Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 hours mm-hmm. a day. I mean, that right there is telling you you're in the wrong business. Even if you were to start a plumbing company, there's a much better way to do it. You start to compile other plumbing companies in town. You start merging them together. So those people are doing the 30 to 40 hours a week work, not you. If you're putting in 30 to 40 hours a week work and you have a traditional small business, you're doing it wrong. And the reality is so many people do it wrong that we somehow get this bad taste in our mouth and say, oh yeah, well, my neighbor tried to start a business. That was terrible. I'm just going to stay at my job where I don't see my wife or kids. I'm never going to make it. The job is literally killing me, but at least I didn't try something. And the guy, I know, right? That's ridiculous. The guy who wrote the foreword for my book, even in the foreword, said that he tried 16 businesses and failed. But the last one made him well over $1 million a year for the past 20 years. Now, you never hear that with a job. You never hear, well, I had a job, I got fired, had a job, got fired, had a job, got fired, had a job, got fired. But man, that last one I applied to, they decided just to spontaneously pay me $1 million a year. It can't happen. So when you have this idea of, well, should I do it, which one can God bless? God doesn't defile, he doesn't defy laws. The laws of mathematics, the laws of nature, gravity still works. I don't care if you're saved or not saved. So if mathematically it is impossible for a job to create economic and spiritual freedom when it comes to you controlling your time and money and not your boss, how on earth would we ever expect him to bless that? Meanwhile, if you start a business, which is his model for his people, even in Egypt, then that is something he can bless. That doesn't mean you're going to succeed, and it doesn't mean, again, it's about a certain amount of money. Notice how this entire interview, I'm not saying, hey, I'm going to make you a millionaire. That's not the point. The point is, how do you and God control it as opposed to becoming a servant to somebody else? That's the point, and everybody can do it. We've had people come through the class that were 75, 80 years old, for goodness sakes, and they can take part of entrepreneurship.
And that's just, I mean, you know, the way we do things, the way we think of things, our whole outlook and the way we look at our world, our country, our lives is based on the way, you know, history has been, what other people tell us, how it should be. We too often listen to other people rather than listening to the Lord and to what he said and following the example of successful people. And I don't mean successful in a money sense. I mean successful being happy with their life and yes, what they do. And, you know, we need to, you know, if everybody were to start a business, you know, we have an economy based on supply and demand. But we've been taken over by, you know, mega business like Walmart. But we see those now dying out. Almost 300 Walmarts are closing worldwide now. They lost some, how many billion dollars? Yeah, I mean, they're losing money left and right now. And McDonald's, the same thing. So these business models that come in, start these huge, you know, super centers, these big malls, big shopping stores, undercut the little guy, then grow massively and plant their businesses all over the country, are now drying out. You know, is this a climate for, you know, small businesses to rejuvenate and
yes,
come back?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I am so glad you asked that question. You are a genius, man. The reality
you give me way too much credit.
The reality is that a quote-unquote bad economic time is actually good for us. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but when it's a good economic time, let me give you an example. When it's a really good economic time, when you're listening to Fox News or whatever and the economy's booming, when you try to start a business, you're going to look at commercial space that might rent for $2,000, $3,000, $10,000 a month. You need to have $50,000, $60,000 a month ready before you can even get the spot, let alone the build-out or the clients or the advertising or whatever. Well, in a bad economic time, when nobody's renting, You can literally go to that realtor, and I just worked a deal like this, so I know it's true. You can literally go to that realtor and say, hey, you know what? Nobody's renting this anyway. You're losing money every month. I'll rent this for nothing. I'll just give you a percentage of what I do out of this. That's not possible in a great economy. Now, here's the other thing. In a good economy, quote unquote, it's really hard for the little guy to survive. People like Walmart, Target can come in and just chop your legs off. But in a bad economy, it's actually the opposite. In a bad economy, the small guy has the advantage. And you might be thinking, why? Well, because the big companies carry a heavy debt load. And that's a whole complex thing, and there's matrices for it. But the reality is that they're up to their eyeballs in debt, even these billion-dollar companies. So when a bad economy comes along, they still have payments to make. You don't. So you can come in and say, okay, well, that really big company that was going to charge you $2,000 to do the roof, I'll do it for $1,000. Now the big company cannot compete with you because there comes a point where they hit the law of diminishing returns. Like, for example, I met a couple in the Olympic Peninsula in the state of Washington. This couple was in their mid-60s, and they made well over $100,000 a year just following around mining operations. And I said, you make, and this was even surprising to me. I'm like, you do what? And they said, well, think about it. It costs $5,000 for that mining company to sift through the stuff that they missed. And they're not going to do it just to make $1,000. They would literally lose $4,000 an hour. So we go behind them with no overhead. We sift through it. They don't mind because they would literally lose money. We sift through it, kind of glean the field, so to speak, and they make well over $100,000 a year. So the reality is that it is never a bad time to start a business. And I'm going to cover another thing that ties into that, Joe, and that's this idea of, well, Josh, there's a whole lot of regulation. Yes. The question I have for listeners is, why do you think that is? Do you think the powers that be create a lot of regulation to prevent you to start a business because of how terrible it is for you? Or because they know how powerful it is for you? Notice how there's less and less regulation to become an employee, but more and more to start a business. There's a clue there. Beyond that, it doesn't matter. Is there regulation? Yes. But the reality is that if you've ever been to prison or know anybody who's been to prison, they will tell you that there is that guy in prison who can get you anything you're looking for. You want cigarettes? He's your guy. You want a girly magazine? He's your guy. Well, wait a second. You're telling me that somebody can be an entrepreneur literally in an 8x8 steel box? And you're telling me that you can't find an opportunity in 3,200 miles of America? It's not that there's regulation, it's that we don't know how to look for opportunity. And we only tend to look at the exact place that they put the regulation. It's kind of like a nightclub. We want in the front door because that's our mindset, like you were talking about. We're not taught how to do this. We want in the front door of the nightclub. They know we want in the front door of the nightclub, so they put the bouncer at the front door of the nightclub. Meanwhile, there are three back doors that nobody knows are there, and they're completely open. All you have to do is walk in.
Oh, wow. Think about that, folks. You're right on the money.
And there's never a better time than now.
Absolutely. Which, you're right. I mean, the only, as I sat back and I was listening to everything, really the only thing that's stopping any one of us is our own mental limitations we place on ourselves.
Yeah.
And a certain amount of common sense, but the limitations that we impose upon ourselves. And at times even a skewed perception, not an accurate perception of biblical principles, because if we did follow the Bible, the principles contained in the Bible as it relates to business, you know, there's a lot to be said about the Bible as being a book. Well, instruction book for success, and that includes all aspects of your life, including your business life or your, right. your professional life. Indeed. Wow.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with really the amount of money. I remember when I was young, I was probably 21 years old, and I met this couple in their 30s, and they were starting a business. And I helped them in that process, and they were crying. And I said, what are you crying for? And they said, well, we've been praying for months for something. We go to bed every night thinking, is this all life is? And I was young and single and all that sort of stuff, and I just thought, well, it had to be because they didn't have any money. Then I was talking to a guy who made multiple millions of dollars a year, had 5 homes and 2 jets. And I was telling him this story, and he goes, Josh, I go to bed every night thinking the exact same thing. So this is not, folks, about how much money. It's about how much life. How much life do you want to get out of life? And to me, somebody once told me, now this is not theological, it's just metaphorical, right? It's just an example. But somebody said, Josh, hell would be dying and meeting the person you could have been. And I think about that every single day of my life. Is there something that I didn't do that I could have? And the reality is, guys, if you don't take a chance, you don't have one. There's no such thing as okay, well, God's going to save me, and then he's just going to stick me in a cave, and I'm going to live here for the next 40 years and die because that's his plan. Show me that. I will give you $100 cash if you show me that in the Bible. The reality is it's not in there. So we have to make a decision for life. And that's what this is about. That's why this message is so important. That's why people were asking, Josh, when you go to hear the Watchman, are you going to be talking about this stuff? Because this, all the stuff that we cover, because I cover it too, all the stuff we cover is vitally important. But without this element, and I don't think it's me, if you know me and my history, I'm not that A student, I'm not that bright, but this is like the missing element. This is what has been missing from Christianity for 100 years. I didn't come up with it. This used to be taught, but we've given it up in lieu of, well, come to church on Sunday, but Monday through Friday, go to a job. Yeah, that's new. That didn't exist prior to 100 years ago.
Very interesting and very true. Wow. All right.
You know, we had one of the people that do the accounting stuff with us in our studio, and he went on a missionary trip to, I don't know,
the Dominican Republic, right?
And he was expressing how the people there were so nice and warm, and how they lived in these straw huts, and it was very poor. But he said, you know, you'd walk around, and people were happy, and he'd be invited in, and just about every place you walk by, and they, you know, give you some food or something to drink. And
yeah,
and you think about that, and you think about how we live here in America, and you know, people walk in front of your house, and basically, if you don't know them, you might as well, everybody's attitude is, you know, just get away from me. We turn the other way, walk over homeless people. Yep. And what is it about their life that is so simple, yet they are content to the point that they live their life, even though they have, you know, basically nothing, what we would consider nothing. But yet they're so giving, they're so friendly, and why have we lost that here?
Because they have that list that I was just describing, and we don't. Matter of fact, I have a completely free teaching. I don't even want anything from you. If you go to Purple Monkey University, I actually teach that list on there for free. But that's the difference. I remember I was in Jamaica, and I put this in the book. I was in Jamaica, and I was at a very nice all-inclusive resort and all that sort of stuff. And I met a guy who was self-employed, but made like $50 a week or a month or something, like just poorer than poor. But the guy was happy. Because he controlled his own time. He woke up every morning and had breakfast with his children. He had a goat outside, bananas up in a tree, fish in the ocean, and the guy had a great life. But he was an entrepreneur. Then I met a guy who was in the hot tub with me back at the resort. He's there because his doctor told him he needed to work on his health and his marriage. His daughter doesn't talk to him. He's a high six-figure income earner, and his life is terrible. So again, it's not about the amount. It's about life itself. But you can't have life itself if somebody else is signing your paycheck. It's not even possible. Because, I mean, really think about this. We think of the Hebrew slaves as slaves like early American history slaves. But they weren't. If you go look at archaeology, they were just servitude slaves. They just had to work for the Pharaoh 30 hours a week and give him 30% of the revenue. That was slavery in the Bible for the Hebrew slaves. That's why Pharaoh even said, yeah, you guys can go, but you got to leave the livestock here. You don't let a slave go. So we have this wrong picture. The reality is that even then, they understood the power of entrepreneurship, which is why Joshua had a little bit more freedom than the other people, because unlike the other people who are just mashing bricks or doing whatever, he said, wait a second. If you want your face on that stone and I'm going to cut it into that stone, then I want perks. I want to have my own house and I want to have my own servant. And he got it. Because even in captivity, entrepreneurship works. Even in Russia, in China, entrepreneurship works. And because we don't get that, because we don't know our priority list, then we're living a life where we just feel like we're spinning wheels, even in our ministries. I went to a church. I was sitting in the front row. I heard all these people ask for prayer requests, and all of them except for one prayer had to do with finances.
Wow.
So we have to stop lying to ourselves. My belief is that no church should have the audacity to ask for money or even accept it if they're not also going to biblically teach those people how to make the money.
Wow. Now, that's a revolutionary thought. Not really, but I mean, very true. Very interesting as well. And folks, think about that. Josh, from our listener feedback email, let me hit you with this listener and her question to you, comment/question, if you don't mind. Okay. I'd like you to respond to her because she writes something interesting, all right? And her first name is Phyllis, and she writes this. Josh Tully's belief that you should never work for someone else. Please, I am a community college instructor, and at every step of the way to my current position, I've been led by the hand of God. He needs us in all kinds of places and working in all kinds of job settings. Now that's the entirety of her statement slash question, whatever. Now, how do you respond to that?
I'll tell you exactly how I respond. I respond by saying that's only half the answer. See, there's two elements at play there. One, does God want you in the job that you have? Yeah, maybe. Cool. That doesn't take away from a single thing that I just said, though. So, like, for example, I have a chapter in the book, Does God Love Murder? Because we love this idea, well, God wants me in the job I'm in. God opened that door for me. Well, tell you what, if you're God's child, he's going to bless you even when you're doing things that, as long as they're not sinful, he's going to bless you. It's not a sin to work for the community college. It's not a sin to go work for the factory. So he's going to bless you as much as he can bless you. Hallelujah. Doesn't take away a single jot or tittle from what I just said, though. Now, beyond that, statistically, we know that less than 1% of Christians will ever spread their beliefs at their job. We also know about the increased divorce rate, the increased drug rate, the increased teenage pregnancy rate. So you have to weigh those out and say, huh, is this really where God wants me to be, or is it where I'm at and it's not a sin, so God's blessing me as much as he can? Now, the other element to this is that doesn't take away from the fact that you still need to be involved in entrepreneurship. Because I don't care how well that community college pays, they are never going to give you a 10% a year raise. Well, inflation is 10% a year, and it has been effectively since 1871. So if they're not giving you a 10% raise every year, and you're not supplementing with entrepreneurship, you are being a bad steward, by definition. You are literally the guy who buried the money in the ground and said, bless me, and it's not going to happen. So let me give you an example of another teacher. This is a real life example. And she knew that teaching, while it's what God has called her to do, was also not all that God called her to do. So there's a headline that said, "Humble teacher leaves millions to charity." And I start thinking, well, wait a second, mathematically that ain't happening. There's something to this story that we're just not hearing. So I did a little digging locally and
All right, I think we lost Josh one more time.
Small business that allowed her to then retire with millions of dollars and bless charities with millions of dollars while at the same time being a teacher at the local high school. So that's awesome. I'm so glad you're there. But the reality is everything I said is still true and valid.
Gotcha. And that's kind of how, when I consider that question, that's kind of how I looked at that as well. All right. Now, yeah. I do have to say that we lost part of your audio there. Yeah. However, it didn't matter. I mean, one can understand there was another component to that wealth is what we lost. But people
quickly, the bottom line was that other teacher took advantage of entrepreneurship, and that's where the wealth was generated right. That allowed her to supply for her needs, her kids' needs, and then give millions to charity.
And I think a lot of times, Josh, that sometimes if we think we are, I'm not even sure how to put this. Sometimes we get comfortable, and
yes,
that comfort level is a lot of times to me. And I think about this. I wrestle with this because maybe I'm comfortable, but being comfortable does not cut it, because we've got a job to do and help others and share the gospel, go out and help other people. Being comfortable, that's just a very egocentric position, right? I mean, I've got mine, you know, I've got mine, okay? I'm taken care of. I feel good. But we're not called just to exist. We're called to help others to do what we need to do. I guess that's kind of what I'm saying too. I don't know if that made sense, but
no, it absolutely made sense. I remember I had a guy call the show that said, "Josh, you know, nobody needs that much money." It was talking about taxes and, you know, whatever. And the guy said, I think it was 75 grand he made. He goes, "I make 75,000. I don't need any more than that." And I said, "Wow, that is extremely selfish and greedy." And tell you what, I want you to go down to the burn unit at the local children's hospital and say, "You know what, guys, I was thinking about buying you that treatment that you needed, but I got mine." I want you to go down to the homeless shelter and say, "Hey, you know what, I think that it's terrible that you're homeless, but I got mine." The reality is that we could make everybody listening a millionaire and still not fix the problems, still have problems that God would want us to help go fix. And just the godly truth is that it takes money. It does. Even God put coins in fish's mouths. Yeah, and I think you nailed it when you said, I think there's a level of comfort. And we need to remember, as long as you're not sinning, there's going to be a level of blessing in whatever you do. It doesn't mean it's the best thing or the right thing. And Jesus gives that same parable with that one where that one guy buries it. Remember, the next guy doesn't do as well, but he still gets blessed. That's where a lot of Christians are. They're like, "Well, I feel God called me to this job. God opened the doors. It was a divine appointment that I got the job. So, Josh, obviously God wants me to have the job." No, why would you make that leap? That'd be like saying you were raising Joe and you wanted him to learn how to ride a bike, but you taught him how to walk, so he wants me to walk. Well, that's just part of it. You have to keep going. And we don't do that. We hit that comfort level and stop.
Hey, amen. Amen. That's right.
Josh, we're in the closing minutes. I want to ask one more listener question, if we can. This is from Deborah. She says, "I would like to work for myself, as it would be much better. I understand. Once I find the right business for me, how do I succeed?" So I guess her question is, how does she find the right business for her?
How to find the right business. I have a process called the Opportunity Basket, and I know we only have a few minutes, so I'm going to try to do this quick. The reality is that we have to reverse engineer this. So the first thing you need to figure out is how much time you need, how much money you need, and the people you're going to work with. So it's kind of like I said earlier. Design the life you want, and then it's actually fairly easy to find the right business that does it. The biggest mistake a lot of business owners make is they get into something they either A, like, because somebody in a movie once said, do what you like, you'll never work a day in your life, or B, something that they know. Now, these are typically two of the hardest obstacles, to be honest. They're not the blessings, they're the obstacles. So if we reverse engineer it, we can actually start eliminating hundreds of businesses, and by the time you get through a course like the one I teach, you'll be able to look around and see hundreds. Literally, I make people make a list of like 50 right now. You'll see hundreds of opportunities, and you just pick the one that fits your time, money needs, and people needs.
Gotcha.
And then you get the training on how to run it. It's vitally important. I mean, you get trained to learn how to fly a plane, drive a car, buy a house, raise a kid. You have to do the same thing when it comes to running a business. Don't just say, okay, I'm going to start and hope it works. Take right. the time to come to a weekend event like we were describing.
Amen. And that's it. You know, we have to, folks, one foot in front of the other. Let's start. Let's get up and start walking toward our future and our success. Even as bleak as things might seem, and as bleak as they are, we still have to, well, we're still commanded to occupy, and we're still commanded to be productive.
Josh, do you have any interesting guests upcoming?
We have you guys on the 11th. I mean, how much better can it get than that, right?
Well, thank you for that.
we also got L.A. Marzulli this Friday, who's also going to be at Hear the Watchman. But then we usually fill the entire month with really cool, interesting guests. One of the things I love about my show is I have an amazing producer that takes care of a lot of the guests. So I get the enjoyment, the excitement of almost being surprised when the guest comes on and saying, oh, cool, this is who I get to talk to today. So that's kind of how that works, with the exception of friends like you guys.
Wow. Well, we have to talk to your producer. I think we need one. No, I'm just kidding. We've got so many good people.
Don't take mine. I will fight you.
I don't want that fight.
No, boy, no. Take a look at Josh. I mean, I got to tell you, he's big guy. Josh, thank you so much for being on our program. We've actually just gone through 3 hours of just like that, and so much information, so much biblically based information, and what an enrichment.
Yeah, with all the stuff going on in the world, yeah. and to have you come on and have 3 hours of fun and learning and solutions and
logic, reason, and strategy is what we got, and entertained as well.
And the service you provide to people, you know, just by your radio show and the positive aspects of how you present all your information is very uplifting and inspirational.
Exactly. And folks, follow Josh Tully on Facebook, on Twitter. Okay.
Subscribe to his YouTube, Josh Tully.
Right. Yep, absolutely. And, hey, Josh, until the 11th, and then in Dallas, onward to Dallas. I just want to say thank you for being our guest tonight, and God bless you. Did we lose him again? At least at this point, we lost him at the end of the show. Technical problems, yeah, indeed. I just want to remind everyone, Joe, tomorrow I'll be on with Alex Jones, I believe in the first or second hour, I can't remember which, 1 o'clock Eastern, 12 Central, so whatever, I can't remember. But anyway, we're going to be talking about a lot of issues, including what I said, my thoughts about the Supreme Court, what's going to happen there. and other issues surrounding the domestic situation.
We have Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer and Greg Jackson on tomorrow night.
We do.
Sunday I'll be on with Dave Hodges.
Yes, you will.
For the 2 hours, 8 to 10.
Next week we have Peter Lavenda coming on with us, and then Chris Ann Hall is going to be a guest.
Yeah, we got next week a great week by now.
A whole bunch of stuff going on. I mean, folks, tune in, all right?
And don't forget the live streaming at Hear the Watchman. If you can't attend, you want to see what's going on, you want to watch the conference, go to hearthewatchman.com. There's a live streaming option, $29. Can't beat it.
I want to thank Global Star Radio Network, Todd, for being such a great provider. And, of course, JD, Rhonda, Eric, God bless each and every one of you. Good night.